Johnny Flash. One, multimotor, high, scene, 15 Lucy, 4, overhead, southeast.
Eyes aloft, watching the sky, watching for planes flying the lanes up above. Eyes aloft.
Eyes aloft. The 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces, in cooperation with West Coast radio stations, present the premiere of this new series of Monday evening programs, honoring the 150,000 volunteer, observers, and filter center workers, whose round-the-clock vigilance keeps watchful guard of the Pacific Coast against attack by enemy planes.
Eyes aloft, night and day, we're helping protect the USA.
During this program, and with the sanction of G2 Army Intelligence, we switch controls to an unknown address in San Francisco, where General W.E. Kepner, Chief of the 4th Fighter Command, and his staff officers will honor 8 outstanding civilian volunteers who have come from Washington, Oregon, and California for the ceremony. Also, the new 4th Fighter Command Allegiance Pledge will be given by Colonel John Gray to a mass listening audience of observers and filter center workers gathered around radio sets from the Puget Sound to the Mexican border. Now, may we present the well-known radio, motion picture, and newsreel commentator, Gain Whitman. Recently, Gain Whitman has participated in the making of 17 Army pictures at the Walt Disney Studios, entitled The Identification of Aircraft. We present Gain Whitman.
Thank you, Larry Keating. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. In the summer of 1941, the 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces planned a coast-wide border-to-border practice maneuver. For the first time in American military history, civilians were to become participants in the war games. Quietly, swiftly, the Army went at the gigantic task of organizing civilian forces. Army officers called upon leaders in every coastal county of the states of Washington, Oregon, California, and Arizona. For example, in Merced County, in Northern California's bountiful San Joaquin Valley, an Army officer one morning paid an unannounced call upon Mr. Joe Gastel, owner of the local Ford agency in Merced. August 1941.
Big pardon, are you Mr. Gastel?
That's right.
Captain Underwood's my name. I'm attached to the 4th Fighter Command. I'd like to talk with you.
Chair?
Thanks.
What have I done to run amok of the Army, Captain?
Well, Mr. Gastel, your name was furnished to me by the State Civilian Defense Office.
My name was?
Yes, the Civilian Defense Office has been working closely with the 4th Fighter Command in this state. And we want the help of men like you.
Yeah. Well, sure, anything I can do. The Army needs my help.
To organize a group of volunteer workers in your county. We're planning war maneuvers which will begin December 11th this year.
Well, that's quite a while off.
Only a few months. We have to enlist a big staff of volunteer civilian workers, train them for the job they're to do.
What job is that, sir?
The Army wants civilian forces to operate a closely knit, coastwise, border-to-border aircraft warning service.
This sounds like a big thing, Captain Underwood.
It is. There'll be thousands of observation posts set up at vantage points. Civilian watchers will operate these posts 24 hours a day.
Oh, during the period of the war games?
Yes. They'll report by telephone directly to filter centers. Any airplane they see or hear.
Yeah? Well, what's a filter center, Captain?
Well, I can't tell you much about our filter centers, Mr. Gastel. They're more or less secret.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Now, when we get these war games started, civilian observers will call into these centers and report all airplanes they see.
Oh?
Officers at the filter centers will either identify those planes as friendly or as enemy.
What happens if they're enemy, Captain?
Don't worry. After the civilian observers have warned us, the Army will take care of the rest.
Yeah, sure.
Well, what do you say, Mr. Gastel? I put you down as county organizer for Merced County?
Say, I wouldn't miss a chance to help out on a thing like this for anything.
There'll be no compensation. You won't even get expense money for running your car.
I'll be working for my country, won't I?
Yes, Mr. Gastel. You'll be working for your country.
What do I do? When do I start? Let's get this thing rolling. Say the war games start December 11th, Captain?
Yes, December 11th, Joe. That's when the war games will start.
For 4.5 intense months, the 4th Fighter Command worked with local civic leaders. The ground observer corps was organized. It was a tightly formed system and intersystem of thousands of observation posts, filter stations, information centers. This ground observer corps would, when the time came, activate Army aircraft, coast artillery, searchlight systems, anti-aircraft batteries, set into immediate motion a vast and intricate maze of military defense units. At last, all was ready to test. The system was to be tried December 11th. The war games to be started, but on December 7th, a tyrant nation started a different sort of war game, a real war game. Sunday morning, December 7th, 1941, the Hawaiian Islands, Honolulu, the dastardly bombing of Pearl Harbor by the Japanese. Sunday morning, here in a trusting, believing America, people went about their way as usual. Those who weren't at church perhaps were relaxing in front rooms of homes. Sunday papers scattered about. Children reading funnies spread out on the floor. Wives in the kitchen contemplating the Sunday dinner menu. Such a Sunday morning it was in this typical Pacific Coast American home.
Daddy, Bill won't let me have the part of the funny paper with Blondie.
Oh, now, what's the matter with you, Bill?
Oh.
Give your sister the part with Blondie.
Here.
Henry!
Yeah?
What are you doing?
Reading.
You promised to clean the garage today.
I said some Sunday, not this Sunday.
Well, you just go put on some old clothes and get at it.
Oh, now, Martha.
And while you're out there, get the Christmas tree ornaments down off that top shelf.
Why clean the garage? Everybody just gets it all messed up again. Well, I'm going to see what's on the radio for a minute. Yeah.
Henry, why do you always stall?
Mm-hmm. I just see what the radio has to say.
Henry, if you don't turn that radio off and go clean that garage, I won't cook dinner.
Hear that, Martha? Guy Lombardo. It's your favorite orchestra.
You ought to get the symphony.
I'm not very good at listening to symphony. Anyway, Sunday's a day for rest tonight.
We interrupt this program for a news flash from Washington, D.C. One moment, please.
Hey, what goes?
At 7:36 a.m. Hawaiian time this morning, Japanese planes dropped bombs on the Pearl Harbor Naval Base in Honolulu. What? Many civilians, as well as Army and Navy personnel, are believed dead. Amount of destruction unknown.
Good Lord,
keep tuned to this station for latest news developments. We return you to the program to which you were listening.
Please, Henry, turn it off.
I've told you before, Martha. I never trusted those dirty Japs.
But I just can't believe it.
Well, what's happened, Daddy? The Japs bombed Pearl Harbor.
That'll mean war for us, won't it, Henry?
That'll mean war for us. Don't get jittery.
We'll answer the phone.
It's probably just Jack Miller calling to see if I heard the news.
Will Daddy have to go to war, Mother?
I don't know. Not for a while. Don't you worry, Betty.
This is Henry Smith. Who? Yes. Now? Me, huh?
What is it, Henry?
Oh, you bet I'm glad to. Yes, I'll put on my coat and be right up. You bet. Goodbye.
Where are you going, Henry?
I don't want Betty to go anywhere and leave us.
Oh, now, Martha and children, this is no time for a display of nerves.
Yes, but where are you going, Henry?
That was Phil Lockhart. He's chief observer of our post.
Oh.
He's calling observers to man the post. Say, it's 4 days ahead of December 11th. But the aircraft warning service is going right into operation anyway.
This won't be the play war as you'd planned it.
No, Martha, this is the real McCoy. We'll be watching for real enemy planes now. I got to get my leather jacket. It gets cold up on that hill.
You don't know when you'll be back?
I'll be there as long as they need me. Gosh, Martha. Just think.
What?
The honor I just got tossed at me. I'll be standing guard on the first doggone shift.
Yes.
Yeah. Gee, kid. You ought to be proud of your old dad now.
Up and down the Pacific coast, in every city, town, village, and hamlet, civilian men and women observers were called to duty that Sunday morning. Thousands of women left whatever they were doing, hurried to the dozen or more nerve centers, the filter stations in key cities. The Army supervised the job. The people of the country, volunteers, were working in civilian clothes as part of the Army of the United States. Though they wore no uniforms of khaki, they knew on that ominous Sunday that they, too, were members of the 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces.
In this series of Eyes Aloft programs, we will dramatize the true life stories of those patient, valiant American men and women who, in many cases, at great personal sacrifice, have unselfishly stood the long, weary, uneventful day and night watches as observers, or have sat hour on end with telephones clamped to their heads waiting, waiting for the approach of the enemy by air, ready to swing into action and instantly warn the rest of this nation. It is to those 150,000 volunteer civilians of the Army Air Forces we dedicate these programs and call out the watchword, Eyes Aloft.
Tonight, now, we switch controls to an unknown address in San Francisco. This morning, 8 distinguished aircraft warning service workers from Washington, Oregon, Northern California, and Southern California regions arrived in San Francisco. Each of those persons has served at least 500 hours for the Army. They are to be recognized for their service. Also, throughout the Pacific Coast area at this very moment, thousands of other workers are gathered in meetings where radio sets release this Eyes Aloft program. They, too, will participate in the impressive ceremony which will now follow. Now to San Francisco, where awaits General W. E. Kepner, commanding general of the 4th Fighter Command, his staff officers, Colonel Ernest S. Moon and Colonel John Gray, and the 8 distinguished volunteers of the Aircraft Warning Service. With permission of G2, Army Intelligence, we switch controls to unknown address, San Francisco.
May I present General W. E. Kepner, Chief of the 4th Fighter Command. General Kepner.
In 1775, an American patriot rode on horseback through a dismal night, giving warning of the approach of enemy troops from Boston. Today, with telephones instead of horses, 150,000 modern Paul Revere's stand the constant vigil to instantly warn our nation of the possible approach of another enemy. It is to these 150,000 volunteers of the Aircraft Warning Service that the Army pays tribute tonight. Standing before me are 8 distinguished representatives of our vast civilian army. Tonight, they and others are to receive the coveted 500-hour service medal. Colonel Gray, will you please read the names of these 8 workers who are present at this ceremony tonight?
Yes, sir. Mrs. Milford K. Kingsbury, Seattle, Washington.
I am a supervisor at the Seattle Information Center.
Mrs. Murray McCauley, Forks, Washington.
I am a ground observer in Clallam County.
Mrs. Mildred Feinberg, Portland, Oregon.
I am a supervisor at the Portland Information Center.
Mrs. Faye McKay, Coos Bay, Oregon.
I am a ground observer in Coos County.
Mrs. Alice Jean Jackson, San Francisco, California.
I am a raid clerk at the San Francisco Information Center.
Mr. Burton M. Doolittle, Carmel, California.
I am a ground observer in Monterey County.
Mrs. Betsy Moore, Los Angeles, California.
I am a teletype supervisor at the Los Angeles Information Center.
Mr. Thomas Wilkes, Wildomar, California.
I am a ground observer in Riverside County.
Now, before Colonel Moon reads the citation, our announcer will give a few instructions to our listeners.
These instructions are directed in particular to the hundreds of aircraft warning service meetings being held at this moment throughout the Pacific Coast area. Will the following persons rise to their feet? Observers and filter center workers who have served 500 hours or more. County directors, area supervisors, and chief observers who have served 6 months or more. You will also receive your medals at this time and accept the citation. All right, General Kepner.
Colonel Moon, will you read the citation?
Yes, General. For patience, stamina, diligence, for unselfish service to country, the 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces awards to the worthy the 500-hour service medal.
Now will every member of the Aircraft Warning Service, except those on duty wherever you are, at home or at one of the many meetings, please stand and repeat with us the Oath of Allegiance as given by Colonel Gray.
The 4th Fighter Command Oath of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the United States of America.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America.
To the 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces.
To the 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces.
And to the mission with which it is charged.
And to the mission with which it is charged.
The protection of the Pacific Coast and of the nation.
The protection of the Pacific Coast and of the nation.
From invasion by enemy aircraft.
From invasion by enemy aircraft.
This is General Kepner congratulating the 150,000 of you who are soldiers of the United States as surely as we who have the honor and the privilege of wearing the Army's uniform.
We return the Eyes Aloft program to Hollywood.
Now, true life stories of the Ground Observer Corps. Perhaps you will hear your story tonight or in the broadcasts to come. Southern Oregon, night. A post located in what was once the garage on the Elvin Cloak Ranch, just 5 miles out of Roseburg. Lieutenant Truman Runyon, Grand Observation Officer of that area, making his inspection rounds, drives up in front of the building in an Army carryall.
I've got the motor, Sergeant. I'll be here to visit for a few minutes.
Yes, sir.
Nice warm night.
Mm, it's wild.
Well, I'll go on in. There's a light on the post here.
Hello out there. Who is it?
A Lieutenant Runyon.
Oh, yes. Come in. Come in, Lieutenant. Glad to see you.
How are you, Mr. Cloak?
Just right. Slipping up on us in the middle of the night like this, thought you'd catch the post without anybody on duty, didn't you?
Yeah, I know there's always somebody on duty at this post. It's a swell night, isn't it?
Fine. Fine night.
Hey, how's Haying?
He's good. If we can ever get it cut.
Oh, what's the trouble?
Can't hire farm labor, Lieutenant. Everybody's gone to work in the shipyards or the defense factories or been drafted.
Yeah. Any trouble manning the post these days, Mr. Cloak?
Well, we had some trouble.
Much?
Well, we have a good post here. People have the spirit, but they got to get in their hay.
Mm-hmm.
Most folks are working pretty hard in the fields, helping their neighbors, too.
What about the women?
Well, they got their canning to do, kids to take care of, and some of the women are even helping in the hay fields.
I guess you're trying to tell me a lot of your observers aren't showing up these days and nights, huh?
Well, for a few days, some of us were having to stand quite a few extra shifts.
A few days?
Yes. But things are running smooth again now. Nearly everybody's back on their shifts, even if they are pretty tired.
Well, what'd you do, Mr. Cloak?
I'll let my wife tell you about that. Come on inside the post.
Oh, is Mrs. Cloak around?
Yes. Right inside here. Working crossword puzzle. She's keeping watch with me this shift. Come on in. Lieutenant Runyon, Mother.
Oh, dear. And he caught me working my puzzle.
How are you, Mrs. Cloak?
Fine. Just fine.
Say, there's that old gray bobtail cat still hanging around, huh? Look, Aunt.
Mother, I was just telling Lieutenant how we kind of flipped our observer's problem here. Show him Wally's letter.
I tacked it up over the desk, Elvin. Here, see?
Oh, it's from your son, Lieutenant Wallace Cloak.
Wally's with the Marines. Mother, you read him that one paragraph that counts, the part people talked about?
Oh, now, Elvin.
Yeah, I want to hear what convinced your post observers they ought to keep at this thing.
Well, here, Lieutenant, this part. This is what Wallace wrote to us.
Uh-huh.
He says, "Say, Mother and Dad, don't underestimate the importance of you aircraft watchers."
That makes me a little sheepish. I wrote the boy telling him what we were doing. I guess I said it didn't amount to much.
Do you want me to read this, Elvin?
Pardon me, Mother. Go ahead.
while he goes on. I imagine it takes a lot of patience to always be sitting there on the alert and just watching and listening. But tell the folks at home to keep it up. If you ground observers warn us when those Jap bandits are coming, we'll get our planes up in the air and do the rest. Leave it to us. Wish I was there to help with Hayden. Is Minnie the bobtail cat still hanging around the post? Well, this is all for now. Love, your son, Bobby.
That's the part Mother showed around, Lieutenant.
Yeah, I guess that would kind of convince folks that they're doing a necessary job. Since it came from a boy who'll be knocking the Japs out of the skies, if he's warned ahead of time, by his home folks. Yeah.
December 8, 1941, when the Ground Observer Corps was just being activated, a community in Douglas County, Oregon, found themselves faced with a different problem. The small and well-to-do farming community of Camas Valley is nestled in a valley surrounded by mountains. Winter. At the time, Camas Valley was supposed to support two observation posts, one atop Dutchman Butte, the other up on Live Oak Mountain. 3 feet of snow and ice made it impossible for observers to negotiate the daily trips to the posts. So an observers' meeting was called by the post organizer, John Stanley.
Let's keep the meeting in order, folks. It's getting late. How are we going to settle our problem now?
Well, John, I don't see how we're going to keep those posts running this winter.
What'll we do? Call up the Army and tell them we're going to fall down on the job?
Oh, we got to find some way.
Yeah, but you can't even get a horse up the last 2 miles on Dutchman Butte now. Too much snow and ice.
Well, there's a road up the top of Live Oak Mountain, if we can keep it open this winter.
There's over 2 feet of snow on Live Oak as it is, John.
John.
Who spoke up then? I didn't see.
Me, Ed Bushnell.
Oh, yeah. You any suggestion, Ed?
Well, I kind of think our community shouldn't fall down on this job for the Army. I hate to think other towns and communities were keeping their posts open and Camas Valley couldn't take care of ours.
Yeah. What do you think we should do, Ed?
I'm going to have some free time for a while this winter. I'll go up and live on Dutchman Butte.
Well, that's fine, Ed, but you think you can spare all that time?
I guess it's for a good thing, John. I can spare the time. Of course, maybe somebody else would put in some time with me. After all, a fella can't keep watch 24 hours a day.
Well, no, maybe we can get somebody else to go up there with you.
That night, as the town meeting progressed, others did volunteer to take week-long shifts with Ed Bushnell, the man who offered to keep the Dutchman Butte post open throughout the winter. There were the Harding brothers, Jerry, 18 years old, and Jack, 20. And Vic Stanley, 15, offered to spend every third week up there with Ed Bushnell. But there was still the problem of how to keep Live Oak Mountain Post in operation. The meeting had gone on till nearly midnight when...
Now, let's keep quiet, folks. We've taken up a collection to maintain the two posts, and so far tonight we've got $380, and that's good. Now, what about Live Oak Post?
John?
Oh, yes, Miss Stanley.
Some of us women have been talking together back here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll man Live Oak Post this winter.
Oh, no, that's no place.
Now, look, if you'll get me up there, I'll go up and live this winter.
But isn't a job for a woman, Mrs. Stanley?
I said I'd go up there and keep the post open this winter. Now, my girls, Bonnie Jean and Dorothy, will come up for a week each. And Mrs. Elsie Baker and Mrs. Martindale say they'll come up when they can for a week.
Mother just said I could help.
Well, Quinta Cole has volunteered as a relief for you, too, Miss Stanley.
Well, fine. I'm glad to have Quinta. And anybody else who's willing. Now, I'll be ready to start up to Live Oak Mountain tomorrow morning.
On the following morning, two parties started out from the town of Camas Valley with winter supplies. The men went to Dutchman Butte. The other group, the women, Mrs. Philip Stanley and her young daughter, Bonnie Jean, accompanied by a group of men to get them up to Live Oak Mountain and settle. Toward noon, the little party finally reached the wind-blown crest of Live Oak Mountain. Reached the little cabin there. Found the door jammed shut by ice.
All right, put your shoulder against the door, Jim, and push.
Yeah.
That's it.
Girls, get in here. Come on. It's good to get out of that wind.
Oh, I thought for a while we'd never make it, Mother.
Well, let's get organized here. Jim, you get the kindling, build a fire in the heater.
Yeah.
Miss Stanley, how about you and Bonnie making us some coffee?
Oh, I'll do that.
You want the men bring in the supplies, the food and the blankets.
Yeah, sure.
John.
Yeah?
Look out of these windows here.
Oh, yeah, sure.
We can see all over God's country.
Yes, Mrs. Stanley. We can see all over God's country.
Our country. It's beautiful down there, isn't it?
A little extra snow this year, didn't we?
Little enough we can do coming up here to keep watch over a land like that down below us.
There, there, Mother, you mustn't cry.
Mrs. Stanley.
You're young, Bonnie Jean. You don't quite understand yet all that some of us do. But you're helping. Yes, you're helping, too. What am I doing standing here crying like an old...
That's all right.
Come on, come on now. Let's get that fire, Bill. Let's get some coffee brewing.
Christmas Eve, Mrs. Philip Stanley had served 16 days on icy Live Oak Mountain. At midnight, their telephone rang. Mrs. Baker, who was with Mrs. Stanley that week, answered.
Heavens, that startled me.
I'll get it, Mrs. Stanley. Hello?
Merry Christmas up there! Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
You see any planes yet?
Not yet.
Well, keep watching. Down here, we're all thinking of you.
Yes, we'll keep watching.
Oh, Mrs. Baker, hold the phone down so both you and Mrs. Stanley can hear something.
Well? Mrs. Stanley?
Yes?
Come up here, close.
What?
They want us both to hear something.
Well, what is it they want?
Hello, girls, way up there. Can you hear us?
Yes. Yes.
Well, some of the folks here in town, all of us who were observers till you took over, we've gathered here at the telephone office. We want to sing you a Merry Christmas. Just a second while we get started here.
Oh, isn't that
Merry Christmas?
From December 9th to February 25th, for 72 long days and nights, Mrs. Philip Stanley and her five relief observers kept vigil at Live Oaks Post. And Ed Bushnell and his three observers kept Dutchman Butte Post going. When the trails were again negotiable to daily travel, other observers came to relieve them and carry on the vital work. And mind this, not once in those 72 days did those courageous people sight or report a single airplane. Discouraging? They say not. Useless? No. They were ready, waiting, watching, on duty. Ready to do their part to help warn the nation of the possible approach of the enemy by air. They saw to it that the two Camas Valley posts carried on according to routine schedule. Each week, in cooperation with the Army Air Corps 4th Fighter Command, we present the beautiful Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award to some observation post or filter center for outstanding service performed. Here in our Hollywood studios, Captain Russell Z. Smith, Ground Observation Officer of the Southern California region, will make the award to the Ground Observer Corps unit selected this week to receive the Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award. Captain Smith.
This week, we present the National Broadcasting Company's Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award to Camas Valley Post for solving a seemingly insurmountable community problem, for keeping that post in operation day and night as an integral unit of our national defense.
Next week at the same hour, tune in again for another thrilling human interest broadcast of Eyes Aloft. Good night now, and remember, Eyes Aloft. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.